Hey, hey, everybody. It's episode 74 of The Curvy Critic with Carla Renata. An angel has fallen. Miles Davis is definitely the king of cool. And I'm at D23 as we speak. Stay right there.
You're tuned into Black Hollywood Live, the world's first digital broadcast network devoted entirely to urban entertainment and pop culture. Tune in right now.
Hey, 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 it's your girl, Carla Renata. I am back for episode 74 of The Curvy Critic with who? Moi. So literally, I'm not here in real time. Literally, I'm at D23 in Anaheim, California, and I'll explain what that is in just a few moments. But I did say at the end of last week's episode that I would be pre-taping this. So this is a pre-taped episode. There may be some news that has gone down throughout the week that I didn't get to because it would not have happened by the time I recorded this episode. But I did see a couple of films and have some things to tell you. So first up is a film that I saw about Miles Davis. Now, I saw a narrative film about Miles Davis a few years ago called Miles Ahead, and it was produced by Don Cheadle. It was written by Don Cheadle, and he starred in it, and it was called, like I said, Miles Ahead. It was like a fantastical biopic of Miles Davis. It had him in a situation where he was trying to get his music back from somebody that had it and it was locked up. It was crazy as hell. Don Cheadle was really good in it. Imayasi Koyandi, I think that's how you pronounce her last name. She played Frances, one of his ex-wives. Gorgeous girl, gorgeous, gorgeous girl. But that film was a little funky. This, however, Miles Davis, The Birth of Cool, is a straight-up documentary, and it was produced by American Masters for PBS. It's directed by Stanley Nelson, and I'm a huge Stanley Nelson fan. I've seen a couple of his documentaries. I saw a documentary of his a while back called Black Panthers, Vanguards of the Revolution, and it was just, it was really wonderful. I really enjoyed it. And it ended up being the most watched film of African-American people on PBS when it aired back in 2000. And I want to say 2016 is when that was. And it was 2016, Vanguards of a Revolution. And it was the first comprehensive feature documentary of the Black Panthers that had ever been done, and the portrait of that iconic generation. And it did. It broke audience records for African-American viewership at PBS during their series Independent Lens. And it even trended on Twitter for a little while. I also had seen this other documentary that Stanley Nelson did called Tell Them We Are Rising, The Story of Black Colleges and Universities. And it was like a 150-year film historical documentation of HBCUs, of which I am a product. In case you didn't know, I graduated from Howard University. Yes, the real HU Bison. Woo woo. Anywho, that was a really good documentary. I enjoyed Tell Them We Are Rising. I enjoyed Black Panthers, Vanguard of a Revolution. And I feel like Miles Davis, The Birth of Cool, is probably Stanley Nelson's best documentary for me. I don't know why I feel like that, because he had two previous documentaries, one called Freedom Riders, for which he received a 2010 Primetime Emmy Award for, and in 2014, he got a Peabody Award for another documentary called Freedom Summer, which was a fresh look at the multiracial efforts to register Black voters and desegregate the public transportation situation in the Jim Crow South. But Miles Davis, The Birth of Cool, it was absolutely fan-freaking-tastic. This is what I loved about it. I love that he used this innovative way of doing this flash-forward situation of the year that he was talking about in terms of Miles's career and his life. So you got a sense of what was happening around the world and in America at the time before he went into the narrative. He used Carl Lumley, a very wonderful, prolific actor in his own right, as the voice of Miles Davis, and sounded eerily just like him. So you felt like Miles Davis was kind of sitting on your sofa or sitting next to you in the movie theater, expressing and sharing all these stories about his life. And it was absolutely wonderful. He also sat down with some iconic, legendary I can't even find enough adjectives to explain them. Musicians, people like Wayne Shorter, Herbie Hancock, Quincy Jones, James M. Toomey, a music writer that I know for a long time when I was a publicist, Greg Tate, Carlos Santana, Stanley Crouch, his nephew, Vince Winburn, and his kids, and two of his kids, Aaron and his daughter. He sat down with them and talked to them about him. And the one thing that I noticed out of everything that they said, the two common threads that they said, and his ex-wife, Frances Taylor, she was also interviewed. The one thing that all of these people said that was a consistent thread that came up time and time again was the issue of him having a very extremely strong personality. For that time that Miles Davis was coming up, I mentioned earlier about the segregated South. Miles Davis came up during that time in East St. Louis, Illinois, and I'm from St. Louis, Missouri. So during that time that he was coming up, it was considered a really Southern, segregated, racist type of place in the United States. So for him to grow up being this black man with all this confidence and chutzpah that he had, that was not looked upon by white folks very well at all. But he had it, and he had it in spades, and he had that confidence and that cockiness because he had that talent and that genius to go along with it. This is a musician who literally scored a whole French film just looking at the screen with no notes on a paper written down anywhere, and he oftentimes would do that. Marcus Miller, there's a scene in the documentary where Marcus Miller talks about inviting him into the studio to record with him, and by the time Marcus Miller's on the scene, they're using, you know, pre-track tapes and headphones, and there's not a full orchestra in the studios recording the music. And he said Miles sat down, put them headphones on like he had been recording that way his whole life, when he knew full well that he had never done it before. He kind of rolled with the times, and it was one of those things that he used, one of those ideologies that he used to keep himself young, to keep himself current, to keep himself and his thumb on the pulse of whatever the music was at the time. He was considered like a voodoo maestro of music, so to speak. He infused his music at times with electric guitars, sitars, influences from the Latin world with their music. He was something else. And his two biggest albums were Kind of Blue. And Bitches Brew. Sorry, Biatches Brew. That particular album sold more copies than any other album in music history. Imagine that. Any other album in music history. And it was a jazz album. And this was jazz during a time where, you know, people talked about jazz like it was some, I don't know, alien phenomenon. Like, you know, like some aliens had come down onto the planet and just took over. But jazz is the kind of music that can transport you to a place, any place you choose for it to take you in that moment, because it's just instruments, it's just music, it's just a vibe. And Miles Davis was definitely the king of that vibe. They also very briefly expound upon his relationships with women. He was involved a couple of times with some French women that were very lovely and very smart and just really quite lovely people. When they spoke to them in the documentary, you could see in their eyes and in their spirit that was being pushed out through the lens onto us on the screen, through the screen rather, that they were still very much in love with him. And he has since passed on. He's been gone from us for quite some time, but you could still see that they still had that love and that feeling that he gave them when his spirit was here in the physical realm. He was heavily involved. I mentioned Miss Frances Taylor before. Frances probably had the longest relationship with him out of anybody, and I had the opportunity to speak to Miss Frances when I saw that film Miles Ahead that I spoke about earlier. I saw that film at Sundance, and then I saw it again at the Pan-African Film Festival that same year, and I did the red carpet there. And I spoke with Frances, I spoke with Don Cheadle, I spoke with some people that were in Miles Davis's band. It was a dream come true for me to speak to these people, to be able to find out, you know, literally straight from the horse's mouth, what this person was like, how his music affected them directly, because they were very close to him. And a lot of times when you speak about musicians or people that are legendary, like a Duke Ellington or a Billy Eckstine or someone of that nature, most of the people that knew them back in the day are no longer here. So we are very lucky that Stanley Nelson was able to connect with most of the people that he knew that are still here in the physical realm, and they were able to talk about him. And whenever each and every one of them talked about him, they had a huge smile on their face. You could see it, you could feel it in their spirit, you could see it, hear it in their voice. It was just absolutely wonderful. But with Miss Frances, he had a penchant to be very jealous when it came to her. And he, another interesting thing I found out about Miles Davis is that he was, he's not somebody that you would look at and think that he was a big old teddy bear on the inside, but he kind of was. And love was his kryptonite. He, a woman, a really beautiful woman, and one that has some substance, could steal his heart and turn him inside out and upside down like nobody else could. When he was involved with this one woman in France, it was the first time he'd ever fallen in love really hard. And he came back from that, and he was all twisted up in the wind. And that was his undoing, because he came back, he started to drink heavily, he became involved in narcotics. And as we know, eventually the years of being the years of abusing his body with alcohol and narcotics eventually took a toll on his heart, and he passed away. But Miles Davis, The Birth of Cool, is a highly recommended documentary from me. I'm not a huge jazz aficionado. I've said that on this show before when I reviewed the Blue Note documentary, but I'm fascinated at all the different lanes of life and people that resonate and are coming together as a result of this one genre of music. So I highly recommend it. Again, it is directed by Stanley Nelson. It will be out on August 23rd, which would have passed by the time you see this. And it is produced by American Masters for PBS. Angel Has Fallen. Well, now, an angel did fall, but I'll get to that in a minute. Angel Has Fallen was directed by Rick Roman Waugh and is produced by Lionsgate. It stars Gerard Butler, Morgan Freeman, Jada Pinkett Smith, and Nick Nolte. The biggest thing about this movie that you need to know is that it centers around Secret Service agent Mike Banning, who gets pulled into custody when a failed attempt on the President of the United States goes horribly wrong, and he's the fall guy for the situation. So he spends the entire film trying to prove his name. So Angel Has Fallen feels a lot like this old Harrison Ford film that I saw back in the day, where he was trying to, you know, prove his innocence. The movie just kind of dragged for me. I hate to say anything bad about movies. I really do. It breaks my heart when I have to say it. But this movie dragged for me, and it had a lot of, it's action-packed. There is action at the beginning. There is action at the end. It is action within a nth of its life, but it's really strong on action and very short on plot. 3/4 of that film is bang bang shoot 'em up, and there's very little plot that happens. And the plot that does happen involves Nick Nolte, who plays Mike Banning's dad. The scenes between him and Gerard Butler are absolutely gold. And there's this little baby in the movie. I don't know who she is, but she needs like a baby Oscar. She was fantabulous. She cried on cue. She made you think she was really in danger. It was pure comedy. But yeah, this film didn't really do it for me, y'all. I mean, it's okay if you like a lot of action-packed stuff and you like to see people, you know, get shot up and run around with guns and Uzis for, you know, a good 2 hours and have at it. But this isn't something that was a real strong draw for me. So that's all I'm going to say about Angel Has Fallen. Again, it would have been released by the time you see this on August 23rd, and it is directed by Rick Roman Waugh and produced by Lionsgate Pictures. Now, I spoke at the beginning of the intro about D23. So while you're watching or listening to this, I actually will be in Anaheim, California at D23. And what D23 is a convention that is produced and put on by Disney in Anaheim, California, the world, the home of Disneyland, and it's bi-yearly. So they do it every couple of years, and it's an expo that presents 3 full days inside the magic of Disney. They have a costume parade called Mousecarade. They have a Disney Legends presentation where they name a bunch of people that are going to be named Disney Legends. A couple of years ago when they did it, Whoopi Goldberg was one of those people. She flew in especially for that. I don't want to tell you who the people are now because somebody may have an issue between now and the weekend. So I will re-up that when you see me in a couple of weeks. But they have the Disney Legends thing. You have an opportunity to run through the Disney parks and the resorts and have fun. There is a treasure of the Walt Disney archives that they do. They have crown jewels from all the Disney timeless legacies, all their films. And it starts on Friday, August 23rd, and it goes through August 25th, which would be today. I actually would have gone to the Disney Legends ceremony already, and I'll report about that when I come back. Disney Plus is a new channel that Disney has and is entering into the streaming world, and they're going to give an exclusive preview of some of their most highly anticipated original films and series from Disney, Pixar, Marvel, Star Wars, National Geographic, and more, including The Lady and the Tramp, The Mandalorian, High School Musical, The Musical, The Series, and so much more during that star-studded presentation, which is being hosted by my good girlfriend, Yvette Nicole Brown, who promised me she would come by here and talk to us sometime. So we'll hold her to that. I know, right? That's my buddy. She my ride or die friend.
It's awesome.
It is. On Saturday, August 24th, I am confirmed to attend a live action animated version of Aladdin. They're going to do a big, gigantic presentation, including some of the songs. And those special guests that are attending will be a good friend of mine named Lilias White. I was her understudy on Broadway twice. She'll be there. Another friend of mine from the Broadway days, Norm Lewis, who you guys might know from Scandal and Little Mermaid on Broadway. Clinton Greenspan, who was in Aladdin. Jamal Sims, the choreographer of Aladdin. Dee Dee Magno Hall, who is Jasmine in the Aladdin musical, Spectacular at Disney. And Brad Kane, the Aladdin singing voice. They will all do some excerpts of some songs. I'm really looking forward to that because I'm a huge Little Mermaid fan. I love that one. And then, of course, wrapping it all up on Sunday, I am attending the Disney Character Voices, which is a 30th anniversary celebration. Yay! Cannot wait to see that. And I am going to the Art of Disney Storytelling, which will be featuring one of my favorite animators, Floyd Norman. And if you don't know who Floyd Norman is, please look him up. He is the first African-American animator. He was the first animator at Disney Studios, and he was the first one to work with Walt Disney himself. He is legendary. But that is D23. I just hit a couple of highlights from it because the schedule is all encompassing. It's a lot. You can go to D23.com or D23Expo.com to look at the full schedule and see what was happening there. I'm sure by the time this airs, they'll have pictures and videos and all that stuff up. And if they don't, then I will share some of that with you when I come back on September 1st. I just have a little bit of news for you before I run away. So when I was growing up, there were two shows on the air that were like these musical variety shows for people that were interested in being dancers. And it was called Soul Train. And it was hosted by Don Cornelius. And Don Cornelius was a DJ back in Chicago who had this idea of bringing African-American music to the mainstream audiences. That was his dream. And he did it with Soul Train. Soul Train ended up being one of the number one rated shows on television at that time. At one point, I think Dick Clark, who was running American Bandstand, actually tried to buy Soul Train, and it didn't happen. And they were neck and neck with the competition, but it was great. I saw acts on there for the first time that I'd never seen on television before. It was a great place for African-American talent in the record industry to come and do their latest releases, or, you know, some actors would come on there every once in a while. In the later years, they would come on and talk about their projects, and they would always be interviewed by Don Cornelius. The Soul Train dancers became an entity unto itself. Demita Jo Freeman was one of those dancers that went on to become an actress. She was featured in Private Benjamin. Excuse me, she was featured in Private Benjamin and a couple of other films. She was really hot at the time. And she had the longest legs and the limbest body I'd ever seen in my entire life. She was the bomb.com. But she was one of the Soul Train dancers. There's a friend of mine named Elon Carter Prince who was one of the Soul Train dancers. The list goes on and on of famous people that were Soul Train dancers. Darnell Williams, who ended up being on All My Children as Jesse on All My Children. He was a Soul Train dancer. Like, you would be surprised. Rosie Perez was a Soul Train dancer. You would be surprised at the people that were Soul Train dancers that went on to have very full and luxurious careers of their own. And Soul Train started like back in 1971, and it like I said, it showcased musicians and established up and coming people that were in the industry at the time. But it is slated to become a Broadway musical, y'all. Somebody said to me the other day when I brought this up, they were like, this should have been a Broadway musical a long time ago. And it probably should have been. It would have been a big hit. I'm only sorry that Don Cornelius is not here to reap the rewards of all that is going to be. He took his own life a couple of years back. But his son, Tony Cornelius, is very heavily involved with this project, and it is slated to hit Broadway in 2021. It is written by Dominique Morisseau, who also was the playwright on Ain't Too Proud, which is currently on Broadway. It is a musical adaptation of The Temptations. It did really, really well in terms of Tony nominations and acknowledging his talent. I saw Ain't Too Proud when it was up in Sacramento. I saw it here when it played in L.A., and it's a really good musical. If you're in the New York area, go see it. It's really fun. You'll have a great time. If you know The Temptations, go see it. You'll have a great time. The choreographer is going to be Camille A. Brown, who did Choir Boy and the reboot of Once on This Island. Camila Forbes, who did Meet Vera Stark. I also saw that play. That played here in L.A. with Sanaa Lathan. That was really good. I enjoyed that quite a bit. And it will form the nucleus of his creative team with The Roots. Amir Questlove Thompson. Now, you know, if Questlove is involved in a musical about Soul Train, it's going to be off and cracking. The music alone is going to be fantabulous. And he's also on The Tonight Show starring Jimmy Fallon, so you can see him there. He's also going to be one of the executive producers. So be on the lookout for Soul Train, the musical, on the Broadway stage in 2021. I'm sure they'll do some out-of-town tryouts before it gets to Broadway, because that's how it works. They do those out-of-town tryouts, and then they open in New York and hope for the best and keep their fingers crossed. I personally can't wait to see who they cast as the dancers, because those dancers are going to have to be phenomenal. You cannot have a musical about Soul Train and have some mediocre dancers up in there. So I'm really looking forward to who they have up in there. I can't wait. Oh, and I saw this news on my way here coming to tape this show for you guys. Quentin Tarantino, we've been talking a lot about Quentin Tarantino the last couple of weeks. We've been talking about his take on Bruce Lee. We've been talking about his film Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. We've been talking about how he decided to have Sharon Tate portrayed in the movie by Margot Robbie. We talk about Quentin Tarantino at Black Hollywood Live all the time. But this time when we're talking about Quentin Tarantino, we're going to offer him congratulations because he and his new wife are expecting their first child. So congratulations, Quentin. Yes. Congratulations, Quentin Tarantino. I hope you bring into the world a whole new generation of filmmaker that is just as eye-popping and just as controversial as you are. It'll make for a really interesting industry if you do that. All right, so when I come back on September 1st, I will finally, finally, finally be able to talk about It Chapter 2. I know I have been teasing that for the last couple of weeks, but they keep pushing the embargo back. So I have to follow the rules. If I want to keep seeing the movies that the studios put out, I have to follow the rules. So It Chapter 2 is going to come out. I'll be doing that the week when I come back, September 1st. I'll also be talking about Linda Ronstadt, The Sound of My Voice. If you don't know who Linda Ronstadt is, Linda Ronstadt is a Mexican-born American who has the voice of an angel. And this documentary gives you a full range of her life, her career, and her struggle with Parkinson's disease, which she is suffering from now, which also has allowed her not to be able to sing in the way that she used to. And man, I miss her voice. She was great. But I'll talk a little bit more about that in detail. And I'll also be giving you a preview of the Toronto International Film Festival. I will be going to the Toronto International Film Festival. I leave on September 3rd. I will return on September 11th. It's one of my favorite festivals to go to because usually between Sundance and the Toronto Festival, whatever is going to be happening for the Oscar season usually shows up at those two festivals. So I'm excited to see what Toronto has on the horizon. A lot of people are saying they're really excited about seeing this new film with Tom Hanks. Won't You Be My Neighbor? Or It's a Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. Won't You Be My Neighbor's a documentary. It's called It's a Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, starring Tom Hanks. The Hustlers movie with Cardi B and Jennifer Lopez and Kiki Palmer and a host of other people. That'll be showing there. Harriet, the story about Harriet Tubman, starring Cynthia Erivo. If you guys don't know who Cynthia Erivo is, she is the Tony Award-winning actress from the revival production of The Color Purple that was on Broadway not too long ago. And Downton Abbey will be at TIFF as well. Downton Abbey is a full feature-length production that centers around the beloved television series that was on PBS. I'm a big fan of Downton Abbey, so I can't wait to talk about that. But I'll give you more. I have a little more films under my belt because they're going to release the list of films. I think they released it today and I didn't have an opportunity to go through them all. But those I know for sure because those are some that I know I'll be covering. So until the next time, you guys, be on the lookout for Angel Has Fallen, Miles Davis, The Birth of Cool. I will be back talking about It Chapter 2, Linda Ronstadt, The Sound of My Voice, a TIFF preview, and do me a favor, give me a big old thumbs up on YouTube if you're watching, and hit me up on Apple Music, iTunes, whatever they're calling it now, the other platforms, iHeartRadio, Spotify, you know the drill. And I love you. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I will see you on the flip side. Love, peace, and hair grease. Bye.
On behalf of our BHL staff, we would like to thank you for tuning in to Black Hollywood Live, the world's first digital broadcast network devoted entirely to urban entertainment and pop culture. Check out our Black Hollywood Live YouTube page for even more great programming and amazing content. And be sure to subscribe and like our channel when you do. I'm your BHL host, Nakia Monet, and you can find me on all social media at Kiki Boom Boom or at Black Hollywood Live. Black Hollywood Live, Hollywood redefined.
Expressed here are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.